is one of America's prominent sports commentators and columnists,
known for his fearless opinions and passionate dialogue.
I know it's sad, but the best sports conversation has absolutely nothing to do with sports.
He has perfected the Daily Sports Podcast, having produced hundreds of topical, credible shows without even a hint of fake news.
No filters, no mute buttons, no BS, just me and whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
He has done 1,700 TV shows, written 8,000 columns, broadcast hundreds of talk shows, published a book.
He has covered every major sports event nationally and worldwide.
And yet, we still can't shut him up.
The ceiling is the roof.
And now from Los Angeles, inside his studio by the Pacific Ocean,
where he plans on hanging out with a beer immediately after this podcast is recorded.
Oh, man.
Here he is, Jay Mariotti.
The show is unmuted. I'm Jay in Los Angeles. And on a day when Magic Johnson absolutely excoriated the Lakers, Zeke Elliott only sabotaged himself and perhaps his NFL career. After receiving a second chance from the NFL and the Cowboys after a six-game suspension amid domestic abuse allegations, Elliott was arrested at a Las Vegas music festival for shoving an event staffer into a metal gate and onto the ground. The scene, indeed, was caught by somebody with a phone. It was obtained by TMZ. TMZ posted the video, and it does appear that Elliot is having words with his girlfriend, and then Elliot begins talking to the event staff, and all seems okay until suddenly Elliot says something to one of the staffers and shoves that staffer with a forearm shiver as if he was blocking a linebacker in the fourth quarter. Elliot promptly handcuffed, as he should have been, and because it's obvious on the video that he shoved the guy, what do I always say about these cases? Show me the video? Then yes, Elliot faces yet another suspension from NFL commissioner and top cop Roger Goodell. Here is audio of that incident. And this time, because there is video evidence, there is no argument that Jerry Jones can make in Dallas. The Cowboys once again screwed because of the very character flaws they bring on themselves. Jerry, you will not be going to the Super Bowl once again. I don't think you'll ever be going back to the Super Bowl.
All you need to know about sports today in 15 minutes, or maybe 18, you know, depending on the Warriors, the Steelers, Trump, and the LeBron James Media Network.
By staying silent, Magic Johnson could have protected the franchise he symbolizes, the franchise that retired his number in the rafters of Staples Center and commissioned a bronze sculpture of him outside the building. Instead, Magic went on ESPN, dropped a bomb, and poisoned the Lakers, flat out calling general manager Rob Pelinka a front office backstabber in explaining his recent resignation as Lakers president. In the process, Magic makes it even more difficult now to attract free agents to join LeBron James now that Pelinka's power has been deemed secure in the front office by owner Jeannie Buss. Johnson painting a picture of a colleague Pelinka so determined to get Johnson's job that friends around the NBA were calling him, warning him about Pelinka and how he was spreading the word that Magic was not working hard enough. Now, that might be true. Johnson was not a traditional diehard in that president's role, living and breathing the job as so many others do. He has so many other interests in business and in life. We know that about Johnson. But to have Pelinka, remember, Kobe Bryant's former agent, still Kobe Bryant's good friend, wielding the knife and sending emails to Jeannie Buss, obviously wasn't healthy for this organization. I've been backstabbed. You've been backstabbed. It's not healthy. Magic tried to get Pelinka fired by hinting at backstabbing on the night of his sudden resignation, but Buss chose to keep him. So now you wonder if Magic has become the enemy of the Lakers, which would have broken the heart of the late franchise patriarch Jerry Buss and only further spins this dysfunctional franchise into turmoil. And it's only a matter of time, I think, before LeBron James, also not popular when it comes to major free agents joining him, demands a trade to get out of this hellhole. You think Kawhi Leonard, who has been so spectacular in the Western Conference playoffs, is coming to the Lakers? No, he wants the LA Clippers, the team across the hall, which has to further gall Jeannie Buss. You think Kevin Durant wants the Lakers? No chance, as Durant talked about the toxic environment around LeBron James. Pelinka is the point man in charge when it comes to trying to cut a deal for Anthony Davis in about a month or so. Magic Johnson just made that deal even more difficult after his interview with Stephen A. Smith.
Start hearing, you know, Magic, you're not working hard enough. Magic's not in the office. So people around the Laker office was telling me, Rob was saying things. And
Rob Pelinka.
And I didn't like those things being said behind my back, that I wasn't in the office enough and so on and on. So I started getting calls from my friends outside of basketball saying those things now were said to them outside of basketball. Now, not just in the Laker office anymore. Now it's in the media and so on.
And these are people you trust.
Exactly. And people got to remember something. Being in this business for over 40 years, I got allies, I got friends everywhere.
Let me go back to the backstabbing comment. Because you said that when you resigned abruptly inside the Staples Center. And you just educated us that friends you trust, that got to them outside of basketball.
Right.
So did it come down? I understand the Luke Walton element.
Yeah.
But when you allude to the backstabbing, was it Rob Pelinka that you're talking about? Is it Rob Pelinka and other people within the Lakers organization? Who exactly were you talking
about? No, just Rob. I think that other people didn't bother me. It's really funny as I sit here. I don't worry about those type of things. I'm not a guy who is like, oh, man, he said this about me, and I worry about it. What happened was I wasn't having fun coming to work anymore, especially when I got to work beside you, knowing that you want my position. And I'm okay with that because this is what happened, Stephen A. I told him in year two, I'm only going to be here 3 years. So my job is, Rob, to get you ready for this position. So, you know, I was going to help elevate him to the president's position. And so when all this was coming back to me and guys calling me saying, you better watch out for him. And then what was crazy was before when I took the job, you know how many agents called me and said, you got to watch out for him.
Johnson also blamed Jeannie Buss for allowing too many people in the office to undercut his power, including, of all people, the business operations chief, Tim Harris, whom Johnson says tried to talk Buss into keeping coach Luke Walton, his buddy, instead of firing Walton as Johnson wanted. So here's Johnson, the president of the team, and he's got the business guy who wants to keep Luke Walton when Johnson wants to fire Luke Walton. I kind of feel for Magic here. It's almost as if Magic was not there as often as he should have been at the facility, when the cat's away, the mice will play. Jeannie was not strong enough as owner to shut this down. I mean, I've seen this sort of political nonsense in various media offices. I'm sure you have as well. The strong boss shuts it down. The weak bosses continue to let it spread like poison. And that's why the biggest problem I have here is with Jeannie Buss for allowing Tim Harris to be involved, for allowing two of her younger brothers to want more power, and Johnson has to tell them, hey, your kids, earn your keep, and then we'll think about it. What was going on there? What a zoo! And in the middle of it all, LeBron James. Pelinka responded to Magic's comments at a press conference introducing the new Lakers coach and sacrificial lamb, Frank Vogel. Best of luck to Frank.
I think the most important thing for me is the 2 years of getting to work side by side with Irvin are some of the greatest memories I have in sports and work. He's an unbelievable person to work with. He fills the room with joy and vision. And truly, it's it's saddening and disheartening to think he believes things that are a misperception. I think all of us in life probably have been through things where maybe there's third-party whispers or he said, she said things that aren't true. And then I have talked to him several times since he decided to step away. We've had many joy-filled conversations. In fact, 2 days ago, we were reliving the combine and the fourth pick and talking about the great future that this franchise has. So these things are surprising to hear and disheartening. But I look forward to the opportunity to talk with him and sit down with him and work through them, just like in any relationship, because they're just simply not true. I stand beside him. I stand with him as a colleague, as a partner. I've always supported everything he's done and will continue to. And, you know, I think that's the best way to address that.
As I said, in the end, a good owner would have identified the problem, told everybody in the building that Johnson is in charge, and stopped the middle people power coup, which also includes, apparently, the Rambi, Kurt Rambis, and Jeannie's BFF, Linda Rambis. As we can see, Jeannie Buss, unlike her father, is not a good owner. She is clueless. I thought Jim Dolan in New York was the worst owner. Jeannie Buss is now the worst owner in the NBA, maybe in all of sports. And don't come at me with this gender stuff. Oh, you must be a sexist pig. Nope. If we want equality in the world, and we want everybody, the very best people in the very biggest positions, then everybody is entitled and subjected to the same level of criticism. Under Jeannie Buss, the Lakers have gone from the elite to the dregs. And we're going to give her a pass because she's Jeannie, not me. So now we ask this of our rollicking sports dynasty bidding for its fourth NBA title in five seasons. Something never done, by the way, by the Jordan Bulls, Showtime Lakers, Bird Celtics, or Popovich Spurs. Are the Warriors so liberated without Kevin Durant, so free and fluid in their renewed basketball ballet, that Durant's return might interrupt that sweet flow in the NBA Finals? Again, this is not me talking. I will not even remotely suggest they're a better team or even close to it without Durant. And I can't help short memories out there. With even Draymond Green, Durant's antagonist earlier in the season, you remember, saying anybody who thinks that is, quote, insane, unquote. I agree. What I'm saying here is, even with the NBA Finals not starting until a week from this Thursday, Durant will need time to restore his game to 100% after returning from his right calf sprain. Maybe it never gets to 100%. So how should Steve Kerr and Bob Myers manage his return? That's all I'm saying here, contrary to the many people who still hate the idea of Durant even joining this dynasty. And they love how Steph Curry, Draymond, Klay Thompson have turned back the clock with the most joyful form of winning, where every play is capable of bringing down the house and no lead is safe. We've seen that in this Portland series. There's a sense out there that people want Durant to just go away and never return. They're saying, and a lot of this comes from the Bay Area Warriors fans, hey, if KD is headed to the Knicks or the Clippers, why should he get to play in these finals? Well, I will tell you why. Because without Durant, the Warriors will not beat Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee in the NBA Finals, and the Bucks will be getting there. And I realize Giannis fouled out early in the second overtime of the Game 3 loss to Toronto and scored only 12 points with 8 turnovers, by far his worst performance of the postseason. But the Warriors have their kinks as well. That's only going to fuel Giannis for a monster Game 4 and 5. More on that series and also Drake's taunting of Giannis in a bit. It might be more fun and challenging without Durant, and it's more aesthetically pleasing without Durant, and yes, it's much easier to love them without Durant. I get all of that. But they do need Durant to counter Giannis, and there's not even a debate there. And Durant will return at some point of the finals, keeping in mind that games 1 and 2 would be in Milwaukee, thanks to how the Warriors dawdled and screwed around at various points of the regular season. It's no shock that Curry has returned to his shimmy shake, changed the sport, create his shot, hit the dagger form without Durant as the offense revolves around him and Curry and Klay get more shots, obviously. But the real revelation in these playoffs has been Draymond, who has raised his defensive dominance to new, more intense, more destructive levels in the Portland series and has been a Swiss Army knife again throughout the postseason, rebounding, launching the fast break, pushing the pace, deft playmaking, and leadership, all in spectacular fashion. But more importantly here, Green also claims to have a newfound attitude about officials. Really? Should we take this seriously? This is the same loon who clawed at LeBron's crown jewels and cost the Warriors a 2016 title in what could have been a potential five-peat at this point. The same crybaby who has made a career of complaining and screaming and ref-baiting and was doing those very things only a few weeks ago, Draymond was. Forgive me if I think this might be another acting job from a man who's thrilled to be up 3-0 in the Western Conference Finals after taking down Houston in six. And forgive me for thinking Green, though he never would say it publicly, knows he has won that November war of words with Durant by going 5-0 without him. But nonetheless, here is the new Draymond, for what it's worth.
You know, like, sometimes I know, like, all right, we need an energy burst. Maybe I'll take one. But sometimes I'm not mindful and I'll get a tech and then that just kind of killed the energy of our team. And so, you know, I've really been focused and locked in on that. And, you know, I realized I had got to a point to where I was doing more crying than playing. And I'm sure it was disgusting to watch because I felt disgusting playing that way. And I just wanted to, you know, lock back in on the game. I understand that, you know, officials aren't perfect. And, you know, I still have conversations with them now, you know, when they miss a call. But it's a completely different conversation. And, you know, my mom has been really big. My fiance has been really big on just kind of talking to me about that and telling me, you know, to stay locked in on the game. And, you know, I also have some little ones at the house that's enjoying watching me play. I don't necessarily want them to see that. So just try to be more mindful of it.
So we should thank his mom, his significant other, and his kids. Or maybe Draymond is finally becoming an adult? We'll see about that, but Curry could not stop raving about him.
I mean, it's like he's got like 8 eyeballs. He sees everything and kind of knows what to say at the right time. Watched him talk to JB after the missed dunk and kept him engaged. Talking to coach about some certain play calls and reads. Even going into the game, talking about different defensive strategies and whatnot. So, he's just observant of everything and has just a high basketball IQ. And that's just, you know, obviously his experience, but the fact that he's so versatile, he can do a lot of different stuff and knows how to help a team win.
We've always known Curry to be an adult, and we haven't seen him have this much fun in a long time. He likes being the alpha dog as much as anybody, selfless as he was, remember, in welcoming Durant to his kingdom. But he knew they needed Durant as the safety blanket these three seasons, and the Warriors do not win the last two NBA titles without KD, who was the finals MVP both years, right? And they won't win this time either without the most complete player in the league, and that includes Giannis. Durant's absence has made everybody hungrier to be better with the Warriors, but they can't fall behind in games as they do against Portland and an AWOL Damian Lillard who has been playing with separated ribs and expect to come back against Giannis and the Bucks. I don't care if this would be the first time for Giannis and the Bucks in the finals, and I don't care that they struggled in Toronto on Sunday night. I have seen enough, okay? What's crazy is, about the Portland series, the Trailblazers have gotten what they can from Seth Curry, who has tried his best to annoy Big Brother to no avail.
Looked like you came up and missed him.
I told him that's like 70 in a row. I tried to jinx him a little bit. He's like, all right, it's going to be 72. So we made them both. So, I mean, he went finished.
And the Blazers have built big leads with the likes of Myers Leonard, one of those juxtaposed names that should be Leonard Myers, I would think. And they've had the viral video material of Durant, who has not been in uniform, but he is still busy on social media. Durant said to Green in the tunnel after that crazy ending to game two, they ain't trying, meaning the Blazers aren't trying to go to the finals. And the Blazers saw that, and they still lost game three. Hell, Seth Curry went so far to say the Warriors are harder to guard without Durant, which could be perceived as a Curry family shot at KD, as ESPN was milking that lopsided family rivalry for all its casual viewership juice. Durant could not resist firing back on social media with a two-word answer to Seth, quote, hell no, unquote. I wish KD would stay off the damn phone. He can't. He's addicted. Do give credit to Seth, a journeyman who had to bounce around to several teams and leagues before finally finding his NBA place, as his older brother was becoming a legend and he did change the sport. But as you can see, absolutely nothing is phasing the KD-less Warriors, not even the mild calf issue of Andre Iguodala that might limit him for game four, and not even the middle finger injury that still bothers Steph Curry. Though he'd never actually do it, it seems Steph is flipping that finger at the whole world right now, I would say. As you watch the Milwaukee Bucks, and they are going to win this series despite that Game 3 hiccup in Toronto, I am sure of it. They can be slowed when you keep Giannis away from the rim, double-team him, limit your own turnovers, and push the pace. The Raptors did some of that. They did get more clutch brilliance from Kawhi Leonard, who limped his way to more heroics. How long can he limp on that leg? But the Bucks lost only their second game of the postseason because they simply threw the ball away too much and they could not shoot. Giannis goes 5 of 16. Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, Nikola Mirotic. Yuck! The Raptors cracked down defensively on Giannis, and I think the Warriors were taking notes. They double-teamed Giannis. Giannis tried to find open men and clank, clank, clank all night long. I think the Warriors also noticed the way Drake was harassing Giannis. Maybe the Warriors can find a celebrity in the Bay Area to harass Giannis. Well, there's Draymond Green. He will harass 48 minutes, right? More to the point, can Draymond and Kevon Looney consistently keep Giannis from the rim? I mean, in that vein, this is where Durant comes into play. Keep in mind that Durant's presence served to neutralize LeBron James in the last two finals. That's where Durant enters the picture against Giannis and the Bucks. And I think KD could have that same effect on Antetokounmpo, whose energy and force have made him the presumptive MVP, but this is still new territory for him. A Western Conference Finals game in a raucous enemy arena, going to Oracle Arena. But again, the Bucks would have four home games in that series in a best-of-seven series. Forgive me again for looking ahead. I have to. I don't like being bogged down in the moment, if you haven't noticed. The Warriors have not seen a rim protector of Giannis's ferocious caliber or an inside force of such otherworldly power and grace. And the Bucks, when they are hitting their shots, do feed off Giannis on both ends of the court and within their changed culture. He has no ego. He's all about the mission. He is selfless, as you see. He's willing to find those open shooters when he's swarmed and clank, clank, clank. They just have to hit the shots. The central question here, if you're looking ahead to the NBA Finals, can the Bucks defend Curry, Thompson, and Golden State's lethal three-point game when they're hot? Remember, the Bucks have a lethal three-point game, too, when they're hitting their shots. And again, that's where Durant enters the picture. Sorry, Seth Curry, but the Warriors are not harder to defend without Durant. With KD on the court, Giannis will have to devote attention to him, opening up opportunities for Steph and Clay and Iguodala. The Warriors no doubt have taken notice of this complete Bucks team, offense, defense, paint, perimeter, depth, coaching, a team built by the front office to counter skilled small ball teams and coached expertly by Mike Budenholzer, who has maximized it all in his first season in that cool new arena. But the Dubs also have a chance to complete a sweep Monday night and give themselves, let's see, do the math, 9 days of rest? Yep. While Milwaukee is now extended to at least Thursday night. And on the topic of Antetokounmpo, why did the Lakers sign the baggage-heavy Jason Kidd as an assistant coach? Because even though Kidd was fired by the Bucks, and even though his work there is further devalued by Budenholzer's immediate surge, he maintains a good connection with Giannis, who, ready, becomes a free agent in 2 years. He is next in line for pre-agency. Already thinking about Giannis. If nothing else, the Lakers, by hiring Kidd, have planted another hope seed for their gullible fans, though Giannis's temperament is more suited to, I think, Wisconsin than Hollywood. This is the thought process of general manager Rob Pelinka, who will not be replaced, and he will be reporting directly to owner Jeannie Bosue. The good news in Lakerland, Pelicans owner Gail Benson denying a report that she would trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers this season, quote, over my dead body, unquote. So I guess such a trade would be over her alive body. With the miracle of getting that number 4 pick in the draft, the Lakers, I guess, have a puncher's chance of outbidding the Celtics in a Davis deal. I still would not hold your breath, though, or your face might turn purple. Well, the Lakers' color, purple. And it's almost impossible to get tossed out of the NBA for drug use. The league doesn't consider marijuana a drug of abuse, and it doesn't test players as often as other leagues. So Tyreek Evans, in becoming the first player suspended for violating the drug policy since O.J. Mayo in 2016, basically had to have tested positive for cocaine, LSD, heroin, meth, or MDMA, which means Evans had serious issues. A bigger issue for Evans? He is banned for 2 years, just as he was about to hit free agency, where a contract of $50 million or more awaited him. I hope the dope was worth it, Tyreek. And we're starting to hear the teams are leery of chasing baby Kyrie Irving in free agency, having seen how the megalomaniac sabotaged the Celtics this season. Could that be Kevin Durant possibly talking? Maybe he doesn't want to play with Kyrie. If so, I guess the Lakers might have a better shot at Kyrie than we thought, although, again, I wouldn't hold your breath, or altogether now, your face might turn purple. And even when he finally stumbled and actually showed some cracks on Sunday, never doubt the focus, the chill, the deodorant, and the alpha male stoicism of Brooks Koepka. The wind was whipping, the inebriated New York animals were shouting and taking their phone videos, and all could have been lost amid that shocking bogey flurry after ruling the first 3.5 days at the PGA Championship. But just as Tiger Woods survived on 18 at the Masters, Koepka survived after leaving his final tee shot on the downslope of the bunker. Ooh. Remaining poised, he always does, on a brutal course as Dustin Johnson blew the late putting chances to overtake him. So get used to this vision of Koepka. Too cool for school and even too cool for PDA at the PGA. Yes, his girlfriend twice tried to kiss him as the cameras rolled before the round, and Brooks denied her both times rejection. But then hours later, he finally did kiss Jenna Sims on the lips twice in what I would call an emotional victory scene. Look, it's time the masses stop overlooking Koepka's alleged blandness and start recognizing this beast as the very best golfer on the planet. He brought his outsized biceps and sculpted body to Bethpage Black and dominated the way, oh, Tiger once turned the four major events into his own force fields. I mean, is this not a good enough set of quotes from Koepka, reflecting on his fourth major title in his last 8 tries and the various slights he uses to fuel his fire, including those from his biggest critic, the Golf Channel's Brandel Chambly?
There's always a chip. I think every great athlete always has a chip, whether it be somebody saying you can't do something. It doesn't matter. I feel like you look at Michael Jordan or I've heard him talk about it, having a chip on his shoulder, and I think that's important. It works for me. why would I stray from that? It's one of those things, you know, it doesn't need to come from anybody. It can just come from me. I can make something up in my own head and tell myself I can't get to 10 or more. And I'm trying to prove myself wrong. It doesn't need to come from the outside. I can do it internally too.
Since you've been so good at using the slights or disrespect in your career, I wonder what the most disrespected or slighted you ever felt as an athlete in your career was.
Telling me I wasn't tough. That pissed me off. That really pissed me off.
Follow-up question.
Who told you you weren't tough?
I think we all know.
Unfortunately, everybody yawned and made other weekend plans after Woods, who has become mythical in American life after returning from the dead at Augusta National, missed the cut on Long Island. This exposes a real possibility that a 43-year-old man with numerous surgeries and personal problems in his past might see his reinvention become nothing more than a one-off, a single Masters title. Forget right now about winning four more majors and topping Jack Nicklaus's 18. Will Tiger win even one more major? And how does he plan to achieve this in the era of Koepka, who now has won, as I said, four of the last eight majors and actually can sleep in while Woods has to wake up in the wee hours before his tee times going through these three-hour exercise routines that he used to complete in mere minutes when he was Koepka's age, 29. Look, we all loved the Tiger comeback triumph, including the haters, but it would be grossly unfair to allow any obsession with Woods 2.0 to overwhelm the historic impact of Koepka, who, far as we know, never has had a bimbo brigade, never acted like a control freak, and never was busted in an opioid daze while driving his SUV. Brooks Koepka is everything we're supposed to admire about a champion. All business, no bullshit. And how's this for some sass? 4 years ago, he told the coach who recruited him to Florida State, and I'm quoting, "I'm stronger than Tiger is. I hit it straighter. I have a better short game, and I putt it better. How is Tiger ever going to beat me?" End quote, Brooks Koepka. Yet, because of optics and perceptions, the TV ratings do not reflect anything but meh. And it's sad that people can't appreciate the emergence of a potential all-time great because they're still hung up on all things Tiger Woods. Though I shouldn't have to explain, here's why you appreciate Brooks Koepka. He paid his dues as a relative unknown and late bloomer without the immediate PGA Tour ascent and magic dust and hype accorded to the young guns he has left in his divots. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, etc., etc. Koepka left Florida State and had to earn his keep in Europe and Africa. He wasn't playing well then, wasn't good enough for the tour. He would go to play tournaments in Kazakhstan and Kenya before finally hitting the big time. That's why you love Brooks. He paid his dues. And if he does strike us at times as an emotionless cyborg of sorts with those robotic answers and monster drives, I don't care. He showed emotion on Sunday. There is more than enough drama in sports. We've got enough drama kings and queens. What is wrong with the guy who shows up and wins? Besides, Koepka does say very interesting stuff if you would just listen. He shocked the golfing establishment when he said on the eve of the PGA that majors are easy for him. In the process, he sounded like he was putting down most of his competitive brethren as weak.
The easiest way I can break it down is there's about
156 in the field.
156 in the field. So you figure at least 80 of them I'm just going to beat. From there, the other, you figure about half of them won't play well from there. So you're down to about maybe 35. And then from 35, you know, some of them just, you know, pressure is going to get to them. So only leaves you with a few more and you just got to beat those guys. If you just hang around, I think one of the big things that I've learned over the last few years is you don't need to win it. You don't have to try to go win it. Just hang around. If you just hang around, good things are going to happen.
But while he did have his late hiccups on Sunday, damned if Brooks didn't back it up again. Yeah, he slipped a little. He is human. Returning to the number one spot in the world rankings and becoming the first player ever to hold back-to-back major titles at the same time. He is the two-time reigning champ now of the PGA and the U.S. Open. And why would he be anything but the favorite at Pebble Beach next month? He didn't win by double figures. He hardly played his best on Sunday. Was he bored? And only Dustin Johnson arriving too late as usual made a dent in the lead before missing those putts. No player has ever lost a seven-shot lead on the final day of a major, and Koepka, though letting the lead dwindle to one, was not going to become the first. Here was Brooks after winning major number four, pretty damned happy to have survived.
Hey, Brooks, after you celebrated the trophy, you let out a big sigh of relief. How good did it feel to let that out, and why do that?
I mean, why? I mean, I just won. And I'll tell you what, the hour spent from number 11 to 14 was interesting. When they started chanting DJ on 14, it actually kind of helped, to be honest with you. I think it helped me kind of refocus and hit a good one down 15. I think that was probably the best thing that could have happened, and it was very, very stressful the last hour and a half of that round. That's why I let big sign of relief go.
And don't say Koepka doesn't appreciate what he has achieved. He gets it. He just keeps a complicated game in a simple perspective.
Phenomenal. I think that's a good word. Yeah, I mean, it's been a hell of a run. It's been fun. I'm trying not to let it stop. It's super enjoyable, and just try to ride that momentum going into Pebble. I think that's, I mean, 4 of 8. I like the way that sounds.
As for Tiger, it's easy to analyze what happened to him at Bethpage Black. He is a 43-year-old man who, after numerous surgeries and personal travails, can look 53 at times. And because of his continuing health crisis, the back problems, folks, are never going away, he has to manage his health and avoid as much competitive golf as possible, which is not conducive to more glory when the new schedule of majors is packed together now. Masters in mid-April, PGA in mid-May, U.S. Open in mid-June, Open Championship in mid-July, 4 majors, 3 months, and I happen to love the quick procession because it better defines the purest champion at the time and minimizes fluky winners of majors, and we have seen many of those through time. So, yeah, Woods is going to be rusty, and sometimes he's going to look like the Tiger Woods from those dark, disillusioned years. In his 2 rounds, he couldn't find the fairway, was lost on the greens. He hit the ball all over the grounds. Much as I would love to see him win more majors and challenge Nicklaus's record, we all should be accepting reality here. It could be the Masters was a one-off. And if it was, and Woods never wins again, does he really have to win again? He already has executed his comeback from hell, ripped through all of those demons that haunted him. You know, I'd be okay if Tiger just retires, goes to the broadcast booth, captains the Ryder Cup team. I don't know. I mean, I don't want him in pain again and then struggling to win majors and miss cuts. Do you really want that? We just saw the ending of the movie. As for the younger, healthier players who were supposed to take over the sport while Tiger struggled, where are they in the exhaust of the Koepka Jet Propulsion Lab? This was supposed to be the year of McIlroy, but he gagged again at the Masters and didn't putt well at the PGA. DJ, yeah, he was in contention, and he did have 6 birdies on Saturday, but also had 5 bogeys on Saturday. Spieth, so magical in winning the British 2 years ago, is AWOL in the big moments and has gone 42 starts without a victory, missing birdie putts when he could have put pressure on Koepka Saturday. This is what Tiger Woods used to do to the field, bludgeon all challengers with his driver and his aura, punish them with his superior mind. I'm sure some of them think, Brooks cracked on the back 9 on Sunday. Yeah, but he got it together on 18. I think he just vice gripped everybody again. Brooks Koepka is doing the same thing Tiger Woods did all through those years. And again, who says Brooks isn't any fun? He broke into a big grin, as he said, and delivered a fist pump after surviving. He hugged his father, who held up four fingers for the four majors. Do you ever check his social media? Brooks and Jenna Sims are sometimes barely clothed on beaches. I don't look this up. It just hits me when I go on various sites. I see. I don't look for it. And he does seem to love the PDA in those places, right? And when Chambly said last week that Koepka should not be mentioned with the likes of Tiger and McIlroy, Koepka posted a picture of Chambly on his Twitter feed with a bulbous red clown's nose superimposed on his face. Chambly also is the one who said Koepka lost weight for vanity reasons because he was about to appear in ESPN's The Body Issue. It seems Chambly has come around in recent days saying Koepka is, quote, built like Hulk Hogan and swings like Ben Hogan, unquote. Chambly must be the Stephen A. Smith of golf, but I'm mentioning him while also comparing Brooks to Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth? Never mind Chambly. Take it from the great Jack Nicklaus. We need to let our reverence of Brooks Koepka blossom. And I understand why the TV networks and the PGA Championship, long ranked fourth in prestige among the four majors, would want to create an enthusiastic scene that sets it apart from the staid Masters. But the beer drinking and the screaming, some of it profane, did dumb down this major nearly to the level of the Phoenix Open, a drunk fest. DJ looked back at a fan who yelled on his backswing on the fatal missed putt at 16, and while Johnson always is bothered by something in life, he shouldn't have to deal with uncouth idiots in that real critical moment. Two suggestions for the PGA. Stop beer sales after the leaders are done at number 9, and no cell phones on the course. Every bro had a cell phone and thought he was Steven Spielberg. I mean, what do they do with that stuff? Do they post it? What do they do with it? What? Oh, gee, I'm at the PGA. Look at me. This is the Zapruder film. I've got Tiger all pissed off. I got Brooks Koepka looking at me. I cringe when I think about the youth of America, and I'm not that guy on the next-door neighbor with the mower. I'm not him. I just cringe because I should cringe. I have a good read on bros at Bethpage Black. Then again, you have to appreciate how Brooks simply humored the rowdies by slapping skin as he walked to the next hole, even though they had turned on him with those DJ chants.
Brooks, were you surprised, disappointed that the New York golf fans seemed to turn against you there? I mean, you're a baseball guy. Did you feel like you're playing for the Red Sox or something?
It's New York. What do you expect when you're half choking it away?
Let's go to two on the left.
Brooks, just to follow up that, can you expand a little more? Was there disappointment on your part? Is there disappointment on your part? Harold Varner mentioned it in his press conference about he was disappointed to hear the chants of DJ when he's not even in your group. So is there disappointment at being treated that way?
No, I don't think so. I think I kind of deserved it. You're going to rattle off four in a row, and it looks like you're going to lose it. I've been to sporting events in New York. I know how it goes. I'm not, like I said, I think it actually helped. It was at a perfect time because I was just thinking, okay, all right, I got everybody against me. Let's go.
And when the fans broke through the ropes on 18, Brooks had no grudge. He thought it would be a cool picture to look at. And he also kissed the Wanamaker trophy, okay? Again, Brooks Koepka gets it even if you don't get it. And he is the ideal poised champion for raucous times in America. They probably won't win the Stanley Cup, but I am impressed by the perseverance of the St. Louis Blues. And I think I mentioned them as a possible finals sleeper several weeks ago. Check the archives. They were burned by a bad officiating call, a missed hand pass that led to San Jose's winning goal in Game 3. Yet the Blues and coach Craig Berube moved on and won the next two games behind goaltending marvel Jordan Binnington, who shut out the high-scoring Sharks in San Jose and, supported by Jaden Schwartz's hat trick, gave the Blues a 3-2 lead in the Western Finals. The Blues can clinch their first NHL Finals berth since 1970 with a Game 6 win at home, and they're going to be helped by a groin injury to Sharks star Erik Karlsson. But regardless of that winner, neither team will beat the rested Superior Bruins in the finals. Tuukka Rask is on top of his game in the nets, and the big three of Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak are on fire. Again, this would be Boston's 13th major sports championship since 2002. You know, at some point, those duck boats are going to go on strike for unfair labor practices. As if horse racing wasn't doomed to extinction already, we actually saw a frisky 3-year-old Bot Express eject jockey John Velazquez out of the gate at the Preakness Stakes and continue to race without a rider on board, almost contending at one point and rejecting an attempt by an outride to corral the horse at the top of the stretch. The jockeyless horse. Could you imagine that horse winning the Preakness? It didn't. But could you imagine? Then we wouldn't need jockeys. I think we would. But, you know, even after War of Will did win, Bot Express kept running and took his own victory lap. But this was not a cute story. This was another example of how a once beautiful sport has lost its way. The day before the race, a 3-year-old filly named Congrats Gal died after pulling up and finishing last in a stakes race on a hot day at decrepit, plumbing-challenged Pimlico Racecourse. This, as yet another horse died at Santa Anita, the 24th fatality at that track here in Southern California since December the 26th. This is mind-boggling. And what do Pimlico and Santa Anita have in common? Both tracks are owned by the same company, the Stronach Group. It's hardly coincidence. And at some point after an average of nearly 10 horses a week died at American racetracks in 2018, Congress is going to have to intervene and shut down this gruesome, heartbreaking, corrupt death sport. Now it's time for The Buzz, our deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, you have watched golf for a long time, and I realize you have an affinity for Tiger. But will you at least admit today, even if you have called him a meatball, I think you called him a meathead, a meatball, and a mannequin, that Brooks Koepka could be the one headed for all-time greatness here? Not McIlroy, not Spieth, not Thomas, not Fowler. Brooks is more focused. Brooks doesn't care what people think of him. And his favorite saying is, it's only golf. I think all those other guys I mentioned, I think sometimes they think that way too. But right now, Spieth pressing. McIlroy out of his mind. Fowler, I don't think he's ever going to win a major. Shouldn't more players have his mentality, even if he comes off as a cyborg? And will you admit it, Chris, that we're looking at a potential all-time great?
Before I get into the cyborg that is Brooks Koepka, let me just talk about how enjoyable this Monday has been. Watching the Lakers literally light themselves on fire. I guess not them. Watching Magic light the Lakers on fire. It's really been enjoyable. Meanwhile, Jay, Brooks Koepka, can you believe it? For my love for golf, I stayed on top of what was going on in the PGA Championship via my phone. I didn't watch a moment all weekend long because I just don't care about Brooks Koepka. And you could call me a bad sports fan. You could call me a bad sports media member. You can call me a Tiger apologist. There is no interest. Even the kissing video of like him blowing off his girlfriend on Sunday morning, there is no interest that I have in that meatball named Brooks Koepka or meathead. I think meathead's better. Meatball, meathead, mannequin, whatever. I don't find him intriguing. I don't find it good for golf at all. Now, is he better than McIlroy, Spieth, JT, Fowler, my boy Ricky? Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. I'll guarantee you right now he's better than all of them. But that does, if any of those guys, even you know, DJ didn't really get me to turn on the TV. But any of those guys going into Sunday in contention, I probably would have turned on the TV. Brooks, I figured he pretty much had it wrapped up. It would have been a tremendous story. I would have loved it, of course, because, you know, I got a little bit of that likey the watch the world burn thing in me, if you haven't already noticed that as the years we've worked together. I would have enjoyed watching the meltdown. I would enjoy talking about that a lot more than a win. Is it impressive? Yes. Is it good for golf? Absolutely not, Jay.
And Chris, as a romantic at heart, did you approve of Koepka dissing the kissing attempts by his girlfriend before the round?
Like I mentioned, I thought it was kind of whatever. Everything about Brooks Koepka to me is whatever. That's just how it is. I don't feel anything for him, Jay. He doesn't make you feel love. He doesn't make you root against him. I don't know. So him dissing her, it was funny. It gave us at least something to talk about in connection to this guy. I guess that's a good thing.
And Chris, I should ask this about the rowdies at Bethpage Black. Do you agree that the PGA Championship could maybe scale back on the beer sales and ban cell phones from the course? This should not be the Phoenix Open. It's a major.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think that it should be the Phoenix Open. I think that there is still some sort of class left with golf. There's a way you're supposed to conduct yourself. And as somebody who golfs, I will tell you, it's distracting. It's distracting when somebody walks behind you in your foursome when you're trying to fire off a shot on the tee. And I know, I understand it. And people that say, oh, well, these are professionals, it shouldn't bother them. It does. It's just the way golf is. And it's the way your mind works. And it is distracting. And again, we don't need that element. Now, maybe I'm a snobby golfer, but save that for one tournament a year. And it's cool the way the Phoenix Open is done. But we don't need that. PGA Championship, it's a bit of a snafu. As for the rowdy New York fans chanting about DJ while Brooks Koepka was potentially falling apart, I do have to applaud that.
And Chris, as the horse tried to win the Preakness without a jockey, did this question cross your mind? What if there were no jockeys and there were only horses in horse racing?
What about, Jay, if there were horses with no names, as the Great America once sang about? I thought that was intriguing, right? Given all the hoopla about horse racing and the officials from the Kentucky Derby, the fact that we had a jockeyless horse running in the Preakness, that was interesting. What's sad about it is I didn't care about the Preakness. I'm really coming off like I didn't care about sports at all this weekend. The Kentucky Derby left a sour taste in my mouth where I didn't even turn on the Preakness. Had we had a potential Triple Crown winner, I guess that would make me turn on the Belmont, but I probably won't turn on the Belmont Stakes either. But I would tell you, an entire horse race of jockeyless horses, that would make me glued to the television. Did you get the pun there I did with glue? There you go, Jay.
Okay, thanks, Chris, which brings us to quickies, which are just that quick. At least Dabo Swinney is being transparent about a clause in his new contract that did raise eyebrows. Clemson has added as much as $2 million to his buyout if he decides to leave for arch-rival Alabama when Nick Saban finally decides to retire. It does make sense that Swinney would be Bama's first choice, obviously, given his roots as an Alabama native who played and served as an assistant in the program. But Clemson, if you haven't noticed, has one-upped Bama at the moment as the gold standard of college football in 2019. Dabo did create the Clemson monster, so why would he want to acknowledge Alabama as a more elite name by jumping to Tuscaloosa? Dabo also was the highest paid coach in college football with his 10-year, $93 million deal, edging out Saban's average annual value by about $750,000. So why the clause, Dabo? Sweeney claims the school put it in there and he went along with it. I don't buy that 1 minute. And I think by 2024, Dabo will be the Alabama coach. Sorry, but I'm starting to suspect fake news is being spread by Lamar Odom, who is selling a book after all. We're happy to see Lamar alive and well again, because he almost died several times, but he claims to have used a prosthetic penis to pass an Olympic drug test in Greece in 2004, saying, and here's where I get weird here, he Googled, quote, fake penises, unquote, and how to beat a drug test, unquote. Not many people were Googling yet in 2004, and I would not place Lamar among those people Googling way back then, 15 years ago. Also, Lamar claims to have slept with more than 2,000 women. Really? And Lamar claims to have suffered 12 strokes and 6 heart attacks while in a coma 4 years ago while overdosing inside a Vegas brothel. Then why isn't he dead? I don't think it was 12 strokes and 6 heart attacks. I think he had a stroke and a heart attack. Why does he embellish? A Mariotti tip. Save your money. Don't buy the book. Speaking of urine, couldn't John Rahm have relieved himself further in the woods or maybe used a public bathroom at Bethpage Black? The Spaniard chose to urinate only a few yards off the fairway behind a tree, yet he was still in Dustin Johnson's sightline as he weed and his tinkling, yeah, was caught on TV, of course, right in the sightline. Rahm missed the cut, leaking left both rounds. Next. And Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, and Ronald Acuna all hit home runs that traveled at least 450 feet over the weekend. Ad nauseum, the ball is juiced again, which means we're not all that back it up to, which means 3-2-1, which means we're not at all that impressed because these are baseballs on steroids. And here's one of the real heroes in sports. Keenan Lowe, a former college football standout at Oregon, tackled an armed student at a Portland high school before anybody was injured. Now a football coach and security guard at Park Rose High School, Lowe saw the student with the gun and wrestled him to the ground before any shots were fired. It's horrific that such scenes are part of every child's life these days, and let Lowe's quick reaction serve as a blueprint for all schools trying to keep children safe.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too white male for Jemele Hill. Take it away, Jay.
Anybody who watches the show Billions knows there are many creeps inside hedge fund offices. And I'm certainly not here to defend one such creep who actually photographed Alex Rodriguez from an adjacent Park Avenue building, get this, as A-Rod sat on the toilet in his luxury apartment before then sending the photo to, this is insane, a New York story, Wall Street types and media outlets. Still, all of that said, A-Rod, are you brain dead? By now, after a tabloid and scandal baseball career and a new life that includes A-list fiancé Jennifer Lopez and high-profile broadcast work for ESPN and Fox, Rodriguez should know better about intrusions and paparazzi and creeps. So why would A-Rod sit on the can, reading his phone for quite a long time, apparently, and make himself vulnerable? That is just foolish. A-Rod wants to sue, but New York City does have lenient privacy laws. So, Alex, from here on out, just lower the damned blinds so you're not exposing more than maybe a bowel movement scene. That's our show for our producer and editor, Chris. I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody mute you in life.